This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
As mentioned, this is a topic that's really near and dear to my heart. As an intensivist for a long time, we had our challenges with children. What do we do with the kids that are really long-term? At times, we would call them frequent flyers, but really, how do we transition into addressing their specific needs? Very pleased to present our home-based pediatric palliative care model. As we'll go through it, it's really the initials get confusing. We now talk about children, youth, and adolescents with special health care needs. That's too many initials, so I'm going to refer back to just the children with special health care needs. When we look at this, our current system of care is highly fragmented. I think all of us live this and suffer this, but the children really suffer this that have the chronic diseases. In our program, California Children's Services, we cover the sickest kids in California. We have about 180,000 patients that we cover, but we actually only cover their conditions, which I'll get to in a little bit, rather than the whole child. This is an attempt to get past that. I'll go over some of the previous examples of family-centered medical home. Dr. Klitzner here at UCLA has done a superb job of really getting this field going and started in blazing ground, and I'm happy to hear that is continuing. And so what we're going to present today is our Partners for Children Home-Based Pediatric Palliative Care waiver. It's the 1915C program, and I'm very pleased that we just got it renewed, so this will be continuing. We also hope to be submitting this for publication along with the UCLA Health Policy Group in the next couple of weeks. A little bit of background, who we are at CCS, California Children's Services. We are the oldest managed care program in the United States, started in 1927. Unfortunately, the vision in 1927 was looking at what existed then. So they came up with covering certain eligible conditions, not the whole patient. That's something I think we're still reeling from and is not fitting with what I call contemporary models of care. We need to get past that. You'll see some financial data as we go through this. In 2009, we were about a $1.8 to $2 billion program, covered 175,000 children. We cover about the same number of children now. Expenditures are up to about $2.4 to $2.5 billion in 2013. CCS oversees and approves different levels of hospitals. We'll show you in a minute what is our network. It's one of the biggest networks actually in the entire world. We panel the providers, and we provide medical authorization for independent and dependent counties. The larger independent counties do it on their own. We do it for the smaller counties. There's a paradigm shift going on in healthcare, fortunately, and I think this is very much to the patient's benefit. The whole idea of this right here, the whole child, is really key. What we're trying to get away from is chopping our kids up, chopping up the patients, fragmenting the care. You'll hear lots of carved in, carved out as they get into managed care. I don't want to spend too much time on that because it gets to be confusing. But again, chopping up the kids is not what we want to do. Our big role here for me in CCS is getting away from just being an insurance company and actually being an oversight and organizing complex systems of care for our patients. Time to move on to really getting them into, as Dr. Klitzner has led the way, a family-centered medical home type system. This is our CCS network. I don't want to spend too much time on this. It's just how large it is. We've just submitted some neonatal work that involves 132 NICUs. We have the largest network, I think, anywhere in the world, and that they're all linked together. We're all doing outcomes that are the same. Very pleased. Our PICU numbers, I think, are up to 27 now. And for 2014 is the first year we have all of the PICUs reporting the exact same severity-adjusted data in our VPS data system. So we're very excited to have our first year of complete data from the state starting to be analogous to our NICU data system. This is one of my favorite slides. This is actually real. This is the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, unfortunately often known as Obamacare, but really has a lot of things in it, and it is this tall. It's this many thousands of pages. What are the summaries? To me, this is really helping to move forward and looking at equalizing the playing field. Quality, affordable health care for all, being efficient in improving the quality of what we do, adding prevention, chronic disease, and improving public health is a large part. Examining our workforce, we clearly have imbalances in our pediatric population. We don't have enough of some of our subspecialists for this state, I can tell you. Transparency. We're working very hard in being much more transparent. That's why I think our data systems are really going to take that to the next level. And then I was like the last one, revenue provisions. We're spending a lot of money right now. I'm not sure we're getting the same quality that we could be without the integration. These are the desired outcomes of our 1115 waiver program, but really the same type of outcomes that I think we need to really look at. Coordination of care. This is where I think we see in our CCS population of our really complex kids, if we can coordinate their care rather than fragment their care, it does better. Patients do better, and to me, the least important, but it costs less. Customer satisfaction. I've always thought medicine is a customer service business, not necessarily what all physicians like to hear, but I still think we have to work with our customers and do that. And these integrated services really help take that to the next level. And again, family-centered care. Remember when we talked about family-centered care 25 years ago, talked about how inefficient it was. If we included the families in all this, it would just slow us down and bog us down. And that type of culture is 25 years old. I think we've learned that if we integrate things with the family, particularly where you're trying to do so much at home, it's infinitely more successful. This is from Dr. Klitzner. I told him I was stealing one of his title slides. Tom did this work, really sentinel work, looking at a medical home for complex children, in this case with cardiology program or problems. To me, really a sentinel work as far as showing that you can take a clinic, really integrate all the services and have improved outcomes. And I think this has really led the way for our work and many others' works. And I'm very happy to hear that Dr. Klitzner is continuing on in looking at the medical home. This is a changing gears. People don't like our program. We have what I'll call pretty low customer satisfaction rates. This is data, and it's a little busy on this slide. The next one's more relevant. Looking at comparing California to the rest of the country on a lot of parameters related to children with special health care needs. This is work published by Christy Bethel, who really got into looking at this national data while she was at the University of Oregon. But you can see right here, children with special health care need, California ranks 51 out of 51, or 50th, and that's at the bottom. So we come out the lowest on most of these parameters. Children with special health care needs who receive family-centered care, we are ranked 50 out of 51 states. If you look at the metrics that are more comparable to our Partners for Children program, if you look at where do we rank, children with special health care needs who receive family-centered care, we rank 50th out of 51, 49, 49, and 48. So you can see family-centered care, accessing the community services, referral problems, getting one, and care coordination. Clearly, California has some challenges to work on. I don't think this data is perfect, but I think it does tell us we've got work to do. And it's really this type of thing that you'll see in a few minutes, how I think we've turned this around in the Partners for Children program. A little bit about the finances of our CCS program, just to help set the stage for what we'll get into in this program, but also how our kids are different and what challenges we're addressing and what challenges we're not addressing. As you can see here, 60% of, round the figures off, it's a $2 billion program, 180,000 patients, about $12,000 per year. Almost two-thirds of the expense is on inpatient. What's interesting in our population, unlike the adult world with chronic conditions, our kids don't go to the ER. They don't use the ER. They don't abuse the ED. If you do things within CCS to look at ED use when you're starting at less than 1%, really not a good metric to look at. So our patients are pretty sophisticated on that. The challenge that is massive growing and our study does not address is right here, pharmacy. The drug costs in our program are skyrocketing. This wonderful program I'm about to show you that did great as far as reining in the cost for our kids doesn't do anything with the pharmacy. And so I really think that's going to be a challenge for the future. Our first set of data is the pharmacy expenses are now becoming 20 to 25% of our total budget and skyrocketing quickly. Sorry, this is a little bit of a confusing curve. I'm putting this one in. I didn't take the one out of Tom's paper, but this is called the Lorenz curve looking at the CCS population. Just want to focus on two things. If we look here, this is actually the 93% line, but here, cumulative number of patients, if this is where 95% is, You can see the cumulative expenses going over here. This top 5% of patients chews up about half of all of our resources. And so that's the type of patient population, to me, that we need to look at. What's also interesting is if you look down here, the 50%, what I'll call least expensive patients, only take up about 8% or 7% of all of our resources. How much are we really getting for what we do with these children down at this end of the range, I would question. I think that's a good question to ask. What I'm about to show you is what we've been able to do in this end of the range. This is independent of diagnosis, although this graph goes by age greater than one. But the key principle is the same. About 5% of our patients take up about half of all of the resources we use, so about $1 billion a year. And this is looking at it a little bit different. I just want to focus on a couple of figures. This is the most expensive kids in CCS. Here's age less than one. You can see the median for them and the mean is right around $170,000 to $200,000. Same thing, top 5% greater than one. Median's a little lower at 88, but the mean's around 136,000. But you can see there's some very expensive patients, mostly hemophiliacs and occasional transplant patient. But usually it's our drug costs that get us up into the seven figures for individual patients. So again, a real important message is that, and you can see the numbers are small. We're looking at about, if you combine this 1,100 and this here, about 7,000 kids in the entire state represent our top 5%. That's not a number that's impossible to really try to go after and focus on some of our efforts, and then what you'll see is, I think, really leading the way in that. So this is what I want to present really today is our Partners for Children program. This is a 1915C home and community-based waiver. This provides home-based, family-centered, coordinative, palliative care to children with life-threatening conditions. One of the most important points of getting this accepted by both the families and all the providers is that this also includes concurrent care. And the big difference between palliative care and concurrent care is that you can still treat the patient's problem, their disease. You don't have to stop with their medical care. This is not like the old adult hospice world of many years ago that to enter it, you stopped all of your regular care. The key to this is that this allows concurrent care, it encourages it. We work with the families to do that and work with the special care centers. Really, I think, a major point. We started with limited counties, have to be full-scope Medi-Cal. We had the Nick Snow Act, AB 1745, passed as enabling legislation to allow this all to work. The real hard work is only covered in one sentence here. Eligible children identified, enrolled by a county nurse, referred to either the hospice or home health agency that participates in our waiver. The entry criteria is just a predicted one-month inpatient hospitalization in the next year. No lab tests, no anything. And this is pretty soft. This just has to be that the family and their physician feel like it. They absolutely will anticipate one-month inpatient stay. Hasn't been a hard group to identify. Initial pilot ran for, you can see those 2 years, was just renewed through March 2017. I'm very happy about that. I think this is our premier program within CCS, and I'm very pleased. The UCLA Center for Health Policy just finished the evaluation. I'll be presenting a lot of that here in just a moment. So again, I think this is going to be very sentinel. We're hopefully going to get this submitted for publication in the medical literature in the next couple of weeks. As you can see, it was just finished up. So I mentioned, children must live in the participating county. We started with Alameda, Monterey, San Diego, Santa Clara, and Santa Cruz, and then have added now the big addition, obviously, was Los Angeles with roughly about a third of the state's population, and that's been able to get our numbers moving along quite well. This is really sort of where the hard work starts, and I actually like the order of this. First, once the patient is identified, the CCS nurse liaison has to enroll the client, connect them with the proper agency, authorize the service, and be the person for oversight. Care coordinator within either the home health agency or the hospice agency meets the family, develops a family-centered care plan, coordinates all the waiver and community services. That one sentence takes about 2 months. This is a very labor-intensive program to get started and get going. They meet with the family, and the care coordinator meets the family and the CCS nurse liaison bimonthly. There's lots of other visits in between. We actually have a whole system in place for social services and other folks to work with the family. We've just added a telemedicine element to this as an experiment to see if telemedicine will help lower the expenses and cut down some of the people driving around. The referring MD is very important in this, although as this program gets going and going, they actually spend less time with the physician and more time with the care coordinators, and oftentimes it's the nurse and their social worker. Pediatric palliative care is really designed to be a large, really umbrella like this slide shows. It's to provide all the services, have everything under one roof as best can be. Even though this slide emphasizes, you can see music therapy, child life, art therapy, family-centered care plan based on family and child desires. This is the most important part. The mouse went away. Anyway, getting everybody engaged on really listening to the family, having a family-centered plan, and moving forward on that. The other services have been important, but I think it's really the family-centeredness has allowed this to be successful. Very pleased about the UCLA group. This Daphne and all of the gang over at the health policy area have done a superb job. We contracted with them to evaluate this program. I think it was one of the smartest things we ever did, because we have really, I think, a very superb, great evaluation on this. So the following palliative care services, and again, I want to emphasize, this is palliative. This is different than the concurrent. They still get their regular health care. Care coordination, the expressive therapies, art, music, play, family education, respite care if need be, family counseling and bereavement counseling, and pain and symptom management. What's interesting is that the pain and symptom management ends up being the least used. I'm surprised by that, and I'll show you some data in a minute. But really, these what we will call soft and fuzzy type programs, when you talk to the family and talk to them, this is really important stuff, much more than I expected. In some of our telemedicine work, we actually had a telemedicine thing with a child and some of their providers, and this is what they focused on. It wasn't my antibiotics or what medicines I'm taking. It was really this, and I think this type of thing was huge of keeping the kids out of the hospital. Who are our patients? 151 in the report. You can see looking at the ages, this is mostly, I'll say, an older child, adolescent. We had 11% of our kids less than 2 years of age. Again, for the first round, this is great. I think as we build and go on, this will shift a little younger. Slightly more males than females. Okay. And in this case, pretty heavy in Latino, but again, a good smear of everyone across the state. Looking at our counties' participation, you can see initially getting started, Monterey, Orange, Santa Cruz, and Sonoma. Interesting is our diagnosis, really a smattering of everything. And this was, again, the entry criteria was how long you're going to be in the hospital. Nothing to do with your diagnosis or where you are in hemoglobin A1Cs or other things like that. Almost 30% were neurologic, quite a bit of cancer, a few transplant patients, not very many metabolic patients. And I raise that because when you get some of the data, you'll see how just having a few can make one part of the data look a little unusual. Program services utilized. This is the palliative services, not the concurrent services. You can see almost half of the kids got music therapy and massage therapy, and then starts going down to where advanced pain and symptom management was only 6%. That surprised me. To have 7 or 8 times as much music therapy as pain and symptom management, I found unusual, but I think this is the nature of this population. This is the most important slide to me. This is the major outcome. As I showed you earlier, families don't like our program. Most rating scales of CCS, we end up being judged on a 10-point scale with, if we're lucky, 5s and 6s. We see a lot of 4s. Here we're looking at first and second follow-up. So this is when they started the program, and then I think about 6 months later, of surveys of the family and how satisfied they are with the services. I didn't believe these at first. I had to go back and really validate them. I've never seen satisfaction scores in our program like this, where you have 9.8 out of 10 on care coordination and didn't go down over time. Similar numbers for support from care coordinator, ability to listen and be sensitive, the 24-hour learn line. I got concerned when I saw this graph at first. So wait, we dropped on pain and management, but we're still at a 9. And so these are numbers we have just not seen before, and I think really follows. I've spent a lot of time talking with the families, and this is real. They are very pleased. They want to get in this program. One of our litmus tests or checks and tests on this was that three kids had to be disenrolled because of problems with the adult program. This all reverted back, both the happiness, the finances, I'll show you, and other things. And so we're going to get that data finished and collecting on those three, but it really shows that there does appear to be an on-off, that this great surveying doesn't follow through if they get off the program. Utilization. I took this right out of the UCLA report, but because it gets a little bit not as confusing as could be, but you'll see when you get into some of the numbers later. 50% reduction in number of inpatient days. That was the primary clinical outcome of this study. What surprised me when I first started analyzing the study, I thought this was an end-of-life program. At the end of the first 18 months, 70 of the 72 patients were still alive. So it's clearly not an end-of-life program, but we've been able to do PEPM as per member per month. So you go from 4.2 per month, or roughly 50 days a year, down to 2.3, roughly 30 days a year. So we've seen a real drop in inpatient, and this has been consistent. So that's number of inpatient days. The stays in the hospital are shorter. What we have seen is an increase in outpatient, not huge, but about a 10% increase. No reduction in ER use, but again, not a big issue with us. I actually wouldn't have even bothered studying it a lot because the ER is just not a relevant part of ours. I put this slide up, even though its focus is on cost, I wanted to use this to show you that huge decrease in inpatient. And this is the clinical outcome we were trying to achieve. I wish I had days rather than dollars here, but we kept the kids out of the hospital with this program, or the system kept them out, which I think is really the goal. Number of inpatient days, you can see pre and post on the big categories. Cardiac went way down. Transplant went down, pulmonary went down. Interesting, metabolic went up, but it's so few patients that I really don't know what to do with that. But overall, we saw significant decreases in number of inpatient days. The financial results, to me, are fairly staggering in this program. This is, again, right out of the UCLA report because they get into different figures. Starts at $3,300 a month, but then you have to look at unpaid claims that might not have gone through, so we tried to make sure we weren't missing anything. If you included every possible thing we could, the mouse isn't working, it's $2,154 right there per member per month. What this says is, though, that for every dollar we spent, we got back $2.20 or $1.20. If you took the savings and extrapolated it out for just these 150 patients, about a $7 million savings in healthcare costs. Again, not the primary goal for me for this study, but the health savings are pretty staggering. And this is, I think, the best example out there of showing that intense case management on this type of population can really help save a lot of money. This is my favorite slide that the UCLA group doesn't like. I put it in here almost at their objection. This is from the preliminary analysis when we only had 74 patients. But the reason I like this slide is that this defines bending the cost curve. You people talk about the accelerating rates of medical expenditures and how do you bend that curve or even do that. I think rather than bending the curve, we dropped it here. And so this is, again, really to me a striking visual on the finances of the program and what we were able to achieve. The UCLA formal analysis, you can see they did 131 pre, 131 post. The number of months are slightly different. So the total costs are different. But the average per member per month expenditures, $15,600 down to $12,000. You multiply that out by 12 again, you're about $180,000 down to about $150,000 per year, which fits right in with that 5th to 6th percentile I was talking about. So this really does represent the 5% of our most expensive, most complex patients. So again, cost savings, almost all on inpatient. Outpatient went up a little. Pharmacy only went up slightly. I think that's just the rate of medical inflation. My fear is that's going to continue and continue. But this was the goal that we were after, and I think we successfully achieved that. What went down, again, pre versus post, you can see prescriptions as a total did go up, inpatient almost in half, outpatient up some. So a real striking change, what we were hoping to see, and now I think we have the solid data for this. If you look at by diagnosis, how did we do on the different diagnoses? Because a lot of the, I'll say, physicians involved in these centers are a little skeptical of our program. I've had to spend a lot of time talking about concurrent care to get buy-in and get people to participate. Here you can see among our cancer patients, we saw pretty average for the whole, representative of everybody else, 15.7 down to about 12.3 per month, quite a decrease. The cardiac patients almost dropped in half, again, primarily on much decreased inpatient utilization. Metabolic went up a little bit, but when you're talking about this few enrolling months, so that could just be two patients for a year, not very much. Neurologic, again, a pretty, about 20% decrease. So again, across the board, we're seeing that other than a couple of really small populations. I did not expect this in transplant to go down from almost 30,000 a month to 15,000 a month with this. But there it is. That was one of the harder groups to get engaged in this and participate, but I think it's working well now. The conclusions, I don't want to go through all this, but this is, again, right out of the UCLA report, so I don't want to misstate. Number one, we've achieved the triple aim in healthcare: improved care, better health, lower costs. Family satisfaction scores that I would love to be able to take to all of our other programs. Clearly, it saves money. You can debate 33 versus 21 depending upon all the different claims. I'll go with a lower figure just to make it simple. That's quite a decrease in expenditures per month on these patients and annually. Major shift is less inpatient care. I'm still worried about the pharmacy. Saving $7 million on 150 patients is not irrelevant. I think the best thing is that this is such a great model for the future. So the recommendations from the UCLA Health Policy Group is keep addressing the finances. One of the things we've had to do is that this wonderful program was actually losing money for the providers, and it took us almost a year and a half to get a $300 per month stipend addition to the providers to help for this. We couldn't call it an administrative stipend. We had to get more creative, but the key was we had this wonderful program that was not, it was saving the state a ton of money. The providers were in financial troubles. We got that through. That's now in place and I think really helping. And so our enrollments are back going up and bringing on new providers. Increasing visibility, that's my big job. I'm here today. I'm out really trying to expose and educate people about the greatness of this program. Growing operational capacity is a challenge. And this program is a paperwork nightmare right now. It does take a long time to get on the program. There's a lot of forms. We're trying to really hone that down and tighten that down. We have some federal rules we have to work with on that. But I'm working hard to try to simplify the paperwork. It shouldn't take 2 months to get somebody on this. And then just keep this going. What I my fear was for a while was when the waiver ends, the excitement ends, this will fade. By getting the waiver renewed, getting out there, and now for at times the wrong reasons, I'm finding the managed care company is very excited about this program. I say for the wrong reasons. They're excited about the finances of it. I'm more excited about the patient outcomes and how the families are doing, the family satisfaction. However, that said, what I'm the most excited about is it hits all three of the triple aims. And I don't have very many programs, I think, that really successfully do that. So what we presented is really going over our system of care. It's fragmented, particularly for the youths in our CCS program. You can call this children's, youths, adolescents, with special health care needs. I still go back to the simple one. I don't have a three-letter acronym yet. I think we've used those all up in medicine. Again, the top 5% of our patients take up about half of our expenditures. You've seen some previous examples here at UCLA of family-centered medical home that we are building on, and I think the future is great for looking at these systems. We have our Partners for Children waiver, 150 kids. This is, of all of our programs, the one I'm probably the most proud of. I think this is a model of care for the most complex children with special health care needs. It's working, it's continuing on, and the families love it, and so we are trying to take it as far as we can. What are we doing with CCS? We're trying to take this transition, the paradigm shift, and just stop being an insurance company, but look at much more of being organizing and overseeing the regionalization of this complex pediatric care. We've got to get to the whole child. That is the stumbling block, I think, in moving to the next step with our program. I'm not going to get into all the political and other issues with that, but we've got to, I hope, embrace the whole child. But on that, I will say thank you and be happy to answer any questions. Very quick tour through all of palliative care. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.